speak it. It's a great way to kind of get used to chant.
Okay, this is way out of my comfort zone. So I'm going to pretend I'm having tea and talking to Peter. So I just finished a junior program that was a collaboration with the Meta Institute and Spirit Rock. And Frank asked me to share some things, whatever moved me. And I thought I'd start that in January once in a while. And Linda came and asked me to share something about the Bodhisattva vow. So that's what I'm going to do now. So, you know, the first time I ever heard the Bodhisattva vow, I think I had a little bit of a panic attack, especially with the first one. Creations are numberless, I vow to free them. It's also said, beings are numberless, I vow to save them. That one especially got me. And so over the last 2 years, the Heavenly Messenger Program was a Buddhist study using the Heavenly Messengers, which are aging, illness, and death. And then the fourth messenger, which was an arhat, someone who knew that the path to, that there was a way to awaken. And these are the four people that Siddhartha, the Buddha, met when he left the palace. And that's kind of what awakened in him the curiosity and the resolve to go out and figure out what this was all about. And so this is a little backwards, because actually our last retreat, we really emphasized the Bodhisattva vows, but it's good timing for our Sangha. So the stuff that I talk about tonight is really going to draw on Frank, who's my primary teacher, Terry, Norman Fisher, who gave a beautiful talk at our last retreat that really was very moving to me, and also to, from all other teachers, and really from my Sangha, you know, you guys, and also the Heavenly Messenger Sangha. And one of the things they asked us to do there was to think back at the very first time we had a conscious moment of actually helping someone. And for me, that actually turned out to be when I was about 6 years old. And we used to live in a house that had oil fields behind it and oil derricks. And there was a dog that many animals would get caught back there, but this is one I remember. It was a starving, poor starving dog with ribs showing. And he showed up at our little chain link fence, piece of hole there. And myself and my siblings and a few other kids in the neighborhood, we just had this strong desire of like, what are we going to do about this? It's horrible. And and so we collected our pennies and change, and someone ran off to get some canned dog food, and I stayed with the dog, and it really impacted me. And so I think that was the first time, it's the time that I remember of that, of really bodhicitta actually awakening me, you know, where someone else's suffering moved me to really want to do something about that. And so it's been an overwhelming thing. I think we all kind of hit on that every now and then, maybe every day, of all the suffering in the world. Something changes, something new all the time. And it's been, I think, a struggle in my life to reconcile all that suffering with this desire to help and feeling rather helpless a lot of the time. And one of the things I've run across is a quote from, it's based on the Talmud, and it is this: "Do not be daunted by the enormity of the world's grief. Do justly now, love mercy now, walk humbly now. You are not obligated to complete the work, but neither are you free to abandon it." And so if I look at the Bodhisattva vows as got to save everyone. It's just like, no way. It's impossible. It really is impossible. Frank was talking about the impossibility of that. It's like, yeah. So for me, it's really like one being at a time, you know. And recently from another teacher, I heard something, and I think this is also based on the Jewish faith of, you know, take care of your corner of the world. And I can do that. I can smile and talk with the grocery clerk, and I'm a hospice nurse, so I can, you know, one-on-one with people. And so more and more, I'm really seeing that this is the way that I can do something, just one thing at a time. And Norman Fisher, I don't know if any of you have ever heard him talk, but he's just, his song is called Everyday Zen. And he's just really funny, very, very down to earth, and very much about every day. You know? And so he was talking about this, and I'm just going to read you something that I wrote down from the retreat. He says, the vows are impossible and ridiculous. They are this way because humans are impossible and ridiculous. We can't be satisfied. Give us everything, and we still want everything plus one. We have an unlimited capacity to make ourselves miserable. Knowing this, we just don't beat ourselves up about it, because we already know that it's impossible. And it was such a relief to hear that, you know. I was just like, oh yeah, I don't have to worry about, like, everybody. I just need to, like, do what is possible in my own life and move forward from that. And he also talked about the imaginative, that you need imagination to be on this path, and that we don't talk to kids and say, you know what, that sand in the sandbox, it's really not the beach, okay? You know, we were inspired by their imagination. And so he actually has some instructions on cultivating kind of a curiosity and a joyfulness and a playfulness. And it's really simple. One of them is just like, just be amazed. Just look at things and be amazed. You know, a redwood seed turns into a redwood tree. Like, that's pretty amazing. I had to write this one down. I wrote one down somewhere. It's like, yeah, so the bodhisattva vows are possible. We can use our imagination and be like, okay, well, we could do this, you know? And it is amazing, and it is impossible, but it's not really any less possible than a planet flying through space at 107,200 kilometers per hour, while it spins at 1,670 kilometers per hour, and we don't even fall off. Like, that's amazing. I know there's science behind this, but, you know, for me, that's just like this, it's a place of grounding. Like, okay, life is really, you know, crazy. And, you know, reality is pretty crazy. And Norman also talks about, you know, what we take as reality, and we've been doing this for a long time. You know, at the different retreats, we're talking about conditions and our ideas of reality and whatnot, and you know, again, what we take as our ordinary reality, we know that that's not reality. We know there's something much greater, much bigger than that. Most of the time, our view is really narrow. And so remembering that that narrow view really isn't reality. It's not, you know, that's ordinary reality. But there's really a much larger view than that. So those are the things that actually help me with the bodhisattva vows. The other three, you know, the first one is the one that I find impossible. The other three I found very, I find really supportive. Illusions are inexhaustible. Well, thank God somebody figured that out, because, you know, it's like we have so many ways of deluding ourselves and imagining things that... that one's easy to understand. And then reality is boundless. You know, again, that's I think perhaps many people in this room, if not everybody, has had a taste of that. Yeah, so that to me does not feel impossible. And the awakened way is unsurpassable. I vow to embody it. Again, for me, that's a really supportive view, because when I'm awake, life is different. You know, I don't cause harm, and I'm kind, even in really difficult circumstances. So, a couple things that really shifted for me. One was at our Cottonwood retreat, when someone there was talking about how one day as she was meditating, she realized, as she was speaking, you know, saying her intention or her dedication, may all beings be free, may all beings be safe, that, you know, other people were saying that. And other people were meditating, and other people were saying that, and she was included in that. You know, and for me, that was like this aha moment. You know, and so when I sit, you know, I'm dedicating, and I'm dedicating to Janet and to Peter and Jenna and Kay. You know, like, and I know that you're dedicating. I'm including in your dedication. You know, and you know. It seems obvious, but it was just a really, it was one of my insights, you know, of the strength of that, the power of that. And following that, I went to our last retreat in Spirit Rock. And same thing there, you know, it's about 100 people. And we had been talking about the Bodhisattva vows, and part of the retreat is everybody's doing service, and most people there are already doing service in their life in some capacity. And as we were reciting this vow and talking about our very beautiful intentions and sincerity about service in the world, you know, and I just looked around the room and I was like, gosh, all these people, you know, are every day affecting other people and other beings and serving them and trying to do it as awake as possible. Yeah. And it was just really touching. It just dropped inside my heart. Yeah. That I really felt like maybe it really is possible. Maybe we really can do this, you know, really change the world and create less suffering. And if you don't believe me, and you have an iPhone, get the meditation app. I don't have an iPhone. But you can, who has it here? Right? And every time you meditate, it's like 10,000 people are meditating right now. That's good encouragement. So one of the things that Norman says is, we come to understand we are deeply, inherently connected to all living things, to all things, not just what we think of as living things. And Terry talked about how, you know, you come to the Bodhisattva vows one way or another if you stay on this path, and, you know, one way is kind of logically just sort of taking things apart, and you finally get to this idea that nothing else makes sense except to relieve suffering, or through an insight that you might have that we really are connected and inseparable, or capitulation. I love that one. Nothing else works. And so for me, really, the Bodhisattva vows have become like my North Star. You know, when I'm off course, I remember, and I trim the sails, get back on course, and keep going. And it happens 1,000 times a day. Yeah. That's all I have to say about it. Thank you. Yeah, I can take questions, I guess. I don't know if I'll have answers, but I'll take questions.
So, have you seen the relationship to the vows?
Yeah, so have I seen my relationship with the vows change since I was first introduced to them? Yeah, in a big way. But, you know, I think when I first, particularly that first one, this, you know, we'll save everybody. I think initially, you know, or just culturally, we have this whole thing about codependence and don't save other people, save yourself and think of yourself first. But, you know, it gets mixed up in that. And then there's like, you know, who I think I am, that I could actually take a vow like that. And so, you know, loosening up around all of that, really. And because it's, when I think about it in terms of just doing what's in front of me, you know, helping the person in front of me or being, you know, kind and connecting with the server at the restaurant or at the grocery store, then it's not so extraordinary. So in fact, it's really ordinary. And so for me, I think that was like one of the biggest shifts of seeing it as that rather than kind of as a cognitive idea of like, oh, the bodhisattva vow, we're going to save everyone, you know? And I've actually even started thinking about it as like, you know, we're on a field trip and we're just going to make sure everybody's on the bus before it leaves.
What did you feel when you saw this dog and you went and got dog food and everything? How did you feel?
Well, I think, you know, it's a long time ago. I was sad. I remember being very sad. And, you know, for me, it was like really an opening into the view that there is suffering in the world. I actually remember swinging in the playground at school after that, and I was composing a song about, and it was very tragic. You know, I kind of laugh about it now, but it reminds me that little children feel very deeply. And it was just this really sad song about the starving junkyard dog.
How did you feel when you helped the dog out?
You know, I don't remember. I think we finally must have gotten the dog out. I can't imagine that we didn't involve my parents, you know. We would bring every stray thing home we ever found, including friends. I don't know. I don't remember. Yeah.